Allow me to take you on to, not off topic, but not entirely, but onto the next topic. We started with Cammy, we finished with Cammy. Will the party go with Cammy, or with Robert, or with Tom, or with Jimmy? What do you think? Where now? You know, as the oldies would have it, whither? The Conservative Party, can they win again? How can they win again? Their conference is in Birmingham, and it's all kicking off.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
The voice of the UK.
What's their phrase? I wrote it down somewhere. The phrase that they're using. I did write it. Oh, I got a voice in my head. Review and rebuild. Is that right? Does that say it all for you? Labour have got off to a sticky start with one thing and another. And it's given them slightly more of a spring in their step than they might have had. They've got, I think they're perhaps feeling a little bit better as they might have. It's not all entirely doomsters and gloomsters. So we want to hear what you think about the situation with the Conservatives as they start their conference. Rosie Duffield, Labour MP, resigned, said lots of disobliging things about the Labour leadership. But it's a massive week in this country's politics. Can the opposition get its act together? And amidst all the infighting, Rishi Sunak, he's now made his last speech as Tory leader, said that the party needs to unite or it would never return to power. Like Labour last week, the Tories very much on our agenda this week. So we want your thoughts. Do I need to remind you of the situation just a few months ago? Reduced to 121 MPs, the worst general election return in their history. There was reform on one side, Liberal Democrats on the other, and they're in the middle, stuck in the middle with, well, with who? We shall find out. 1 minute past ten.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms for our terms of use and privacy notice.
Yes, not a normal Conservative Party conference, more of an extended beauty parade for the four contenders hoping to become the next leader. And there's a lot of like me, like me, like me going on. 2 minutes past ten. Here is the news from Richard Foster.
Thanks, Nikki. Hamas says the leader of its operations in Lebanon has been killed in an Israeli airstrike. The Palestinian militant group says he was targeted in a refugee camp near the city of Tyre. There's been no let-up in Israel's bombardment of Hezbollah sites across Lebanon. Britain's last coal-fired power station closes down later. Ratcliffe-on-Soar in Nottinghamshire first started production in 1968. When the plant shuts tonight, the UK will become the first major economy to stop using coal to generate power. Doctors are urging people to get their flu jabs after a drop in uptake last year. The UK Health Security Agency says there were at least 18,000 flu-related deaths over the last couple of years, despite relatively mild flu seasons. And Dolly Parton and Barbara Streisand are among the artists to pay tribute to Kris Kristofferson, who's died at the age of 88. His music and acting career spanned 60 years. Dolly described him as a great writer.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live. Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The party of individual freedom, very much the part of the Conservative shtick over the years. And as Kris Kristofferson said, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. That was a terrible shoehorn of stuff, but I just had to do it. So what do you think about the Conservatives' prospects going ahead in the future? Can they win again? Well, they're going to win again one of these days, unless they completely implode and something very strange happens on the right of politics. Can they come back? What would it take for you to back them? As I say, really interesting comments from Theresa May. She said the party was too focused on the threat from reform to see the threat from the Liberal Democrats, rather like Ingebrigtsen in the 1500 metres final, who concentrated far too much on Josh Kerr. Look what happened. What a race that was. What a race this is going to be this week. Two will emerge and then they will go on and be voted on by the members. So how much of a threat threat is a success of the Lib Dems and of Reform. You've had a couple of months of Labour in power. Do they look like they are here to stay? Big majority, fragile vote, though, one has to say. What was it, 34%? Really interested to hear how you're feeling now if you switched from blue to red or blue to yellow in the summer's in the summer. Can the Tories win again? 08085 909 693 85058. I'll be reading those texts with the usual care, attention and interest. Samantha Smith is with us, who is a Conservative columnist at The Spectator. Samantha, good morning.
Good morning, Nicky. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And Caroline Slowcock, who's always so interesting on the, when you come on this programme, Caroline. We sit at your feet and you listen because you're former private secretary to Margaret Thatcher. Wow.
And, thanks. What an introduction.
John Major as well. It's thoroughly deserved. Well, how do you see the party at the moment, Caroline Slowcock? Bit of a mess?
Yes. In a few words. I mean, I think that, they are actually in truth in a period of transition and, they need to spend a greater period of time really thinking through, you know, what their future direction is. And the four candidates that we have in front of us really are just sort of rehashing a lot of the, you know, the old music. And what I see is, and we've seen it for quite a while actually, that the Conservatives are really sort of running on sub-Thatcher in the tank. You know, it's a small state, low tax, but, you know, Thatcher without the kind of the real vision. And then they put in a smattering of Trump and culture wars. And I think that those ideas have you know, they didn't work at the last election and they're just hammering away at them, these candidates, along with, you know, a lot of talk about immigration, which clearly plays to the Reform Party voters, but I think doesn't play as well to the kind of middle ground. I think they need to talk more about public services and they need to demonstrate integrity. And that, you know, is quite difficult for some of them, I think. You know, we can go into a bit more of that later.
Well, what, no, go into it. Now, what do you mean? Why is integrity difficult for some of
them? Well, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of people are, you know, were concerned about the integrity of Johnson's administration and many of them served under Johnson. And then you've got the top candidate who is Robert Jenrick at the moment, and he has a sort of history that I think is difficult, you know, for him. So when he was Secretary of State for Housing and Local Government, he was involved in a scandal approving a planning permission for somebody who 2 weeks later gave a donation to the Tory party. And he had to overturn it because of the appearance of bias. And that hangs in his history. And then today there are stories in the mainstream media about him receiving a donation of £75,000, which seems to, despite electoral rules, seems to be coming from ultimately from an offshore company. It's 75,000 was loaned to a British company which has no employees. So, you know, I think that that's, you know, there's a question mark over that. We need to hear more about it. But that sort of thing doesn't help when you're trying to make a clean break with the past. And I'm not sure that any of them are sufficiently really looking to the future. You know, as I say, I think they're very much playing the old tunes and trying to, you know, have different variations. But I don't see enough difference between them to make a good choice.
Thatcher with no vision and a smattering of Trump. That's an interesting phrase. And as for Robert Jenrick, he has said that he wanted to put Nigel Farage out of business. And of course, Theresa May is making the point, or the inference from Theresa May is he should be talking about putting Sir Ed Davey out of business as well. But there's an inevitable concentration on Farage. And notwithstanding everything you say there, he's also, Robert Jenrick, in the paper today saying that the Star of David should be displayed at every point of entry to the UK to show that we stand with Israel. I think he's putting that forward as something that really should happen. That's fine, if you agree with it or whatever, but it's certainly something that he's saying that would be a matter of contention for many people as much as many other people who would say it would be a good thing to indicate support for Israel. James Sunderland's a former Conservative MP for Bracknell. We'll be with James in just a minute, and thank you, James. Samantha Smith, how do you see it at the moment as a columnist at the renewed Spectator? Just been taken over, haven't you?
Yes, I absolutely agree that we're suffering, that this current leadership contest is suffering from a lack of substance. You know, Kemi Badenoch, previously she's always been a very intelligent politician, but not afraid to put her chips where she believes the successful lie, has said that, has been pretty careful in some ways in her choice of words, for example, not fully backing the previous plan of leaving the ECHR, as well as James Cleverly, Tom Tugendhat, all sitting relatively on the fence when it comes to issues of the economy and a lot of the particular policy initiatives that they would take. They're trying to play it very careful in front of a very wary audience of Conservative supporters. These are the people who have stuck with the Conservative Party through thick and thin and who are continuing to support them despite the harrowing defeat of a couple of months ago. But I think that more than that, we are experiencing a leadership contest where for the first time in about 5 years, there isn't a clear front runner, if not longer, I would say. You know, James Cleverly, Kemi Badenoch, Jenrick, Tugendhat, none of these were particularly big political players in the future leadership sense until recently. They aren't part of the old guard, besides James Cleverly, who is obviously very experienced ministerially, but he was never seen as, I would say, a leadership contender until the last two or so years. And I think that's good in a way because it distances them from the old regime to an extent. But I don't think that they're focusing enough on the mistakes of the past and addressing the way that the last general election went wrong, because it isn't an election that Labour won. It isn't an election that Reform won. It's one that fundamentally the Conservative Party lost. They lost the new vote that they won in 2019 when it comes to the working class. They lost the Brexit supporting vote that was lent to them under Boris Johnson. And they also simultaneously lost, as Theresa May pointed out very rightly, they lost the Tory heartland, you know, that very traditionally Conservative home counties vote that has been relied upon in seats like North Devon, like in Cheshire.
Because those people found the wooing of Reform voters distasteful.
Precisely. And I think that it's a very difficult line to walk for the current Conservative Party because they have, I think, in the last five years, fundamentally shifted what it is to be a Conservative, and it is very Americanized in the way that they're approaching. You know, there's the story at the moment of Ruth Cadbury on the Democratic election trail in New Hampshire, but in many ways the Conservative Party have also been running an American party in an American political system, and the British public are not used to that. They're not used to this very divisive rhetoric. They're not used to the sort of put up and shut up attitude when it comes to policy initiatives. And so I think that we're experiencing a political landscape with the Tory party where they feel the need to make these bold, sweeping statements, or it's seen that they won't cut through. You know, talking about putting Nigel Farage out of business, that's never been the traditional attitude of the Conservative Party. And I think that the absence of policy and the absence of a clear landscape in which they would rebuild. You know, Labour is giving them plenty of mistakes to
pull
up on.
Well, they said the tens of thousands of pounds worth of free gear, the designer finery, the winter fuel payment, all that stuff, the apparent lack of transparency. They would never, they've had free gifts from Labour, haven't they?
Absolutely. I think that this is quite possibly the best political honeymoon period that the Tories could have hoped for, because Keir Starmer has performed so poorly when it comes to his first 50 days or 70 days in government. And so I think it's a real mistake for the current Conservative leaders to not be playing the Labour game as much as they should. There's been condemnation of the winter fuel payments. There's been certain talk about Labour's lies on the economy and the £22 billion black hole not being an accurate figure, etc. But well, there isn't a clear vision of what they would be doing
instead. You say
it's
lies, but the OBR said it was it was a massive problem. Okay, but listen, just on the
sorry, I was saying the exact £22 billion. black hole figure being left by the previous government was the IFS had called up on and said was, you know, not entirely accurate.
No, but what the Tories are saying is not entirely accurate either, because they're saying there wasn't. So, I mean, I think economists are saying the truth is perhaps somewhere in the middle, but there was stuff that wasn't bargained for. Of that, we do know that that is the situation. Of course, politicians will write things in bold. Just in what we heard about Robert Jenrick, it behoves me to say the donation that we had reference to, he says, was perfectly legal and valid. Here's some news just in. Get James Sunderland to comment on this in just a second. James, good morning. Former Conservative MP for Bracknell lost your seat in the election. How are you doing, James?
Nicky, good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. This is just in. The former Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has warned the Conservatives not to fall into the trap of believing that as the Labour government becomes unpopular, voters will automatically return to the Tories. He told the party's conference that a narrow political strategy targeting voters who had switched to Reform or the Liberal Democrats would leave people to conclude the Conservatives were thinking about themselves rather than the country. He said to members in Birmingham, the trap to fall into, and it is a trap, is to think that as people get fed up with the Labour government, and judging by the last 2 weeks, that's starting to happen far more quickly than people were expecting, to assume they will automatically come back to us. He's a wise old bird, is he, James?
I think he's spot on. What's important for me is the covenant that exists between the Conservative Party and the Conservative offer with the British people. So let's not worry so much about what other parties are doing. Let's work out how we're going to go forward. Let's rebuild. Let's review. I think for me personally, it's about reflection and also contrition. We need to say sorry for some of the mistakes that we made before. And I think ultimately, it's about restoring that party discipline, that sense of purpose, that teamwork that makes us electable again.
What do you have to say sorry for? I'm not saying you don't have anything to say sorry for. I'm asking specifically what demands an apology.
Well, it's very hard to sort of focus on entire groups of people, but clearly to those on the right of the party, we didn't deliver in terms of immigration policies. The Rwanda plan was ultimately ill-fated. I think also we probably didn't do an awful lot to act as a team. And I think what, for me, very important, it's that divisive politics never works. Teams that are not united don't get elected. So the conference at the moment, there are four candidates. It's about how we all unify as a party. It's about people. It's about the right people in the right positions. It's about the brand. It's about how we relaunch our brand. It's about policy. And I think that a unified party that doesn't have all of its internal spats playing out in public is a very good way to start.
Okay, listen, we want to hear from people. What would bring you back into the fold? And also, at the risk of intruding on private grief, what do you make of it from afar, if you are politically far away from the Conservatives? We want to hear from all of you on this. What is the way ahead? Lots of people are saying, who are not Conservatives, it is important to have a strong opposition in this country, in our political system, in our polity, to be holding the government to account. It's a vital part of our well-functioning, hopefully, democracy. What do you think about what you heard there from James, Caroline?
Well, I like to rebuild, contrition and review, but I think that you can't do that if you, as he then went on to say, basically stop the divisiveness, I think, and unify. I think you do be a bit more honest about some of the issues around this trust and Boris Johnson and make a break with that. And I think they're trying to avoid that kind of debate. So, yeah, I think that what we need is actually somebody who's good at listening and bringing people together and really kind of thinking through the future, as well as being just a competent leader of the opposition, you know, and that's really about getting to grips with the detail and having coming up with ideas in response to government's putting forward. And, you know, I just don't think we've got any candidates really who are doing that, though maybe Tom Tugendhat is perhaps the closest. Kemi Badenoch, I think, is she's the most charismatic, and she's the most media-friendly. They're not necessarily in a way that helps her, as yesterday's issues show. You know, she captures headlines, but she's just so divisive as a person. She picks a battle in an empty room, somebody once said. Something similar. So I just think, you know, we do need reflection.
We could be doing a phone-in every day on stuff she says, but that's no bad thing. If she tells it like it is, or in some people's minds tells it like it isn't, that's a good thing. We want politicians to speak their mind, don't we? Isn't that a wonderful thing? Because we all too often accuse politicians of obfuscating and dodging.
Yes, I agree. It's good, you know, it's good for people to be forceful and truthful. That was one of Thatcher's qualities that people, you know, hated and also liked. But I don't think that she's really, you know, if her version of telling the truth is to say something very clearly yesterday about maternity pay and then to, you know, contradict it the next day and say, no, I didn't say that. Because I heard what she said, and I think it was pretty clear that she was saying that, you know, the state's spending too much on things like maternity pay. Now she says she wasn't saying that. You know, she's sort of, she has the appearance of forcefulness, but she's a bit like a sort of, you know, student debating society person. She just throws out stuff and sees how it goes. It's quite Trumpian, actually. In the sense that she'll say things, and just see how they go, and, you know, quite likes the attention, I suspect. But what we need are people who actually don't do what the Labour Party is calling performative politics, but actually do the business of trying to unite the party around a future direction, not just looking back to the past.
That Trumpian element is interesting, an interesting development perchance in right of centre politics, and off she went with the Trumpety Trump, 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 Trump. Well, James, what are you going to apologise? I want to get to these apologies. James, you say there should be apologies, there should be contrition. Are you, as a former Conservative MP, on behalf of your party, would you apologise for Liz Truss?
I came into politics in 2019 in good faith. I spent 26 years in the army. For me, politics is about public service. It's about delivering for those you serve and those you represent. And that was my mantra all the way through. And I was gutted to lose my seat earlier this year. So ultimately, we have got to take responsibility for the failures of the last government. We have got to take responsibility for the individual failings of leaders. We had three of them, of course, in the last parliament. We have also got to take responsibility for where our policies didn't work, because we were voted out. And I think part of rebuilding as a party, part of being electable again, and we will be, it's about restoring trust, discipline and competence, and that's where I'm focused right now.
So would you apologise for Liz Truss?
Well, that was a very unfortunate, very difficult situation. Liz Truss made a mistake. It's for her to apologise. It's very much a case that was part of that lexicon whereby we lost trust and lost faith with the electorate. So ultimately, we've all got to apologise in the sense that the party failed to the point where we weren't electable earlier in July. So I think that part of the rebuilding process is to work out where we went wrong, to work out the mistakes that were made, and after action review, and to put it right.
This idea of a general apology, there surely are specific things that we can pinpoint. Would you apologise for Boris Johnson and what he did in office?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the pressures of government are such that mistakes are made. It's not for me to issue a blanket apology on behalf of the party.
Well, Partygate was a pretty big...
Nicky, I was a Tory MP at the time. My inbox was red hot. The vitriol, the abuse that I got as a decent, hard-working MP was quite extraordinary. Of course, I lost my job, lost my seat in July. So I paid a high price as an individual for the broader failures of the party. So I have a real interest personally in making sure that we learn from these mistakes, that we show contrition where we need to, and then we adopt policies that show that we have learned from that. We rebrand ourselves as we need to, and we get the right people in positions of responsibility that can rebuild that trust with the electorate.
Rebrand.
Nikki, this is really important. There are two kinds of politician. There are those politicians who want to do something and those who want to be someone. And in my humble view, we need more politicians now stepping forward who believe that politics is a noble service, who believe in public service, who want to do something for those they serve. And that's my mantra.
You were hardworking and did a decent job, a good job for the decent people in your constituency, and you're kind of part of that collateral damage in many ways, James. But stay there. Listen to John. Listen to Jimmy. Likewise, everybody else. John, what are your thoughts, John? Good morning.
Oh, morning, Nikki. The Tories are deluded, Nikki. I called your show before the election. I said they're going to get absolutely slaughtered, especially in the Red Wall seats. Reform are going from strength to strength. We are done with the Tories. They're like a pair of old slippers slung in the corner that you don't wear anymore. Forget them. Nigel Farage and the Reform Party are the party we're all going to vote for. We're never going to vote for the same old faces that betrayed us so badly on immigration. They treated us with contempt.
I'm going to bring Jimmy in as well, John. And it's just the way it goes, the way it stacks up.
Nikki, but I am so angry with him.
No. I think Jimmy agrees with you to an extent, John. On you go, Jimmy. And of course, at the moment, good morning, sir. Boris Johnson's book is out at the moment. He's laying into Rishi Sunak. He's saying a lot of stuff that perhaps people at the conference could well do without, because he's reigniting those divisions that they want to move on from, if they ever can. Jimmy, what do you think about what John said?
I think you're right, really. I'll put you in the picture. I'm 75, right? And I drove a truck most of my life. And I started to listen to politics about 72 on my radio. You know, John Redhead and all them. I've listened to all the news programmes. And I've voted for all of the parties. I voted for the Lib Dems because they said they'd get rid of student fees. And when they got into bed with the Tories, they didn't do it. I voted mainly Labour. But to cut a long story short, I'm not voting for any of them. They tell lies. They don't do what they say in the manifestos. The budgets are all the same: cigarettes, beer, booze, and then it's gambling. And then what is it? Take away food back on it, and all stuff like that. None of them have done any good for the ordinary working man. Now, I can't describe a working man, but I think a working man in the day, they earn about 25,000, 35,000, something like that. That's a working man. They go out every day, pay a load of tax, pay a fortune to travel to work, and it's just your money is going out of your pocket all the time.
Jimmy,
I voted Reform in the last election.
Will you vote for Reform? Are you going to vote again? Okay. What do you like about them?
I surely am. Pardon?
What do you like about
them?
Say
again.
What do you like about Reform?
Well, I've listened to what they said, even when Farage was in Europe. I voted just to the European Union, but I didn't vote for armies and presidents and all the rest of it. I just was trading when I voted for it. But anyway, that's by the by. I had two policies come out of Reform. Richard Tice mentioned about the rip-off interest that students are paying for the loans. It's a disgrace when people are trying to get on, going to university, and they're getting ripped off with student loans. And he mentioned that. Then there was another one about earning £20,000 before you pay a tax. Well, that's what it should be, because it costs anyone who goes to work, it costs them a fortune to go. And this lot is in charge now.
It's easier to oppose than it is to govern, as we're seeing at the moment. But listen, to come back on this stuff, James Sunderland, former Conservative MP for Bracknell, from Jimmy and Pete and John straight out the traps, and Peter coming up as well. Did you see any of the Reform conference, James? Did you have a look on YouTube or on social media? Did you see any of that, James?
Yeah, I mean, it's very powerful stuff, and of course, Reform.
Wow, it was thumping, it was pumping, it was vibrant, there was lights, it was like a Republican Party rally, it was incredible. And you know what? It was a massive auditorium, and you know what? It was packed.
It was. We've seen conferences packed, of course, over many years, depending on which party it is and which time. But I just want to pick up on something very quickly. I mean, your callers earlier, I think they're Jimmy and John, they're not wrong. And what I found with the constituents when I met them...
Well, they're not wrong about the European Union being about armies and presidents.
What I'm saying, there's no right and wrong in politics at all. People have their own views, they've got their own impressions on things. And going back to sort of the party piece, it is very important that parties that are electable appeal to the majority with good policies. We can't get everything right. You can't have everything you want. You haven't got a checkbook where you can write blank checks to pay for the world's ills. But the point I'm making is that actually it's about a political party that's best placed to offer the best possible deal for the people of the UK, and that's what we're struggling with.
What would you say, John? You're angry to James. James lost his seat, former Conservative MP for Bracknell. What would you say, John? Where did he go wrong? Why did he lose his seat?
Simply because everything they talked a good talk, but they never walked the walk. They promised us that they would cut immigration, legal immigration, stop illegal immigration. They've done nothing, Nikki. Absolutely nothing. It's still coming across. Now, Nigel Farage, love him or hate him, he means what he says.
Does he?
When reforms say we will cut immigration, legal immigration, and we will stop illegal immigration, they will do it. That's what we voted the Tories in for. That's why we don't believe them anymore. They say everything we want to hear, but they do nothing we want them to do. We will be at every single by-election. We will be a thorn in their side. They've got no chance.
Do you think Nigel Farage can become Prime Minister?
Yes, I do. And if Labour keep going the way they're going, we will get a heck of a lot of votes from them as well. So don't write it off.
This requires the complete further implosion of the Conservative Party, doesn't it?
Well, they've already imploded, if you ask me.
And what happens to those people who would have supported the Michael Heseltine, Ken Clark tradition of one nation liberal conservatives on the left of their party? You know, right of centre ground conservatives. What about those voters who like those people? Where are they going to go?
Lib Dems. Good luck to them. Good riddance.
Really?
Yes.
Good luck to them. Good riddance.
Yeah, good riddance. We don't want them. If they want to vote for people like Heseltine, they want people like Heseltine. We can't stand the Heseltines of this world. I told you I'm angry with them, Nikki. I tell you what, I'm not the only one. There are millions of us.
Peter in Harlow. Good morning, Peter. What are your thoughts? I think you're a natural Tory, Peter.
That is so. Before I expand on that, let me say that I have never minded our politicians making mistakes, as long as they are not major ones. My main concern with our politicians is that they should be well-intentioned. And I don't get, and ever since the charlatan Johnson turned up, I've never had that impression of the Tories, I'm afraid. Yes, totally charlatan.
These are strong words.
Well, maybe, but it's true, I'm afraid. I don't have any skin in this game, personally, but his greatest achievement was to rehabilitate Lord North, I think. And his second was to make...
Top of everyone's list. What, in his book, yeah, when he wrote about it, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And the second was really to make the Conservatives unelectable. I really don't have any faith in this. I come from a Conservative background. I was always a Conservative by conviction, always voted Conservative until Johnson turned up.
Let me put that to James. James, if ever there was a man who had the wind in his sails, James, he got the job he'd wanted. I think Keir Starmer, similarly, he's wanted this job a long time. His focus was completely on this, whether for reasons of wanting to do good or reasons of wanting to do good for himself. Who knows? Well, maybe you do know. But he blew it. He completely and utterly blew it. What folly it was. Did you vote for him ever, James?
Well, clearly he was the Prime Minister that was elected Prime Minister when I became an MP. So he was obviously my first party leader as a Member of Parliament. I can recall vividly, Nicky, vividly, March 2020, new MP. I was sat behind Rishi for his first budget. And the budget was ambitious, it was visionary, it was pretty eye-watering. It was Boris at its best. And then a week later, we were in lockdown. So I don't blame, well-intentioned politicians for the mistakes they made at that point in time. You know, who would have grappled with that COVID situation? It was very, very daunting and very difficult for everyone. But ultimately, I did have great hopes of Boris Johnson. I think he could have been one of the great prime ministers. COVID got in the way of that, plus some pretty poor decision-making as well. And we know what happened then. Liz Truss came in to occupy that vacuum, and she resigned afterwards. So it's a catalogue of errors, in my view, that resulted largely in us receiving the heavy defeat that we did in July. And we have to be contrite. We have to review. We have to rebuild. And then there's lessons. And that's what I intend to help the party to do.
Are you going to stand again?
I would like to. I'm not burnt by politics. You know, the overwhelming sense I've got after 4.5 years in Westminster is that the vast majority of politicians that I work with on both sides of the House were decent, hardworking, and operate in good faith. And I still think politics is a noble profession. I'd love another go. I was chopped off at the knees just at the point when I felt as though I was just making a difference. And I want to go again. And I suspect that the better quality of the MPs and those who lost their seats in July may well fight another day.
How much did you lose by, and did reform make a difference in your particular constituency, or were you hit more by the Lib Dems?
No, it was the Labour vote stayed relatively static, actually, but my vote collapsed. I lost by 700 votes. They went to reform and to the boundaries, sadly, so I lost about 10,000 votes to the boundaries. But what was interesting, Nicky, just to come back to this point, I'd knock on doors continuously for the previous 6 months for the election campaign, and I had people say to me, time after time and time again, James, you're a good MP, you worked hard for us, but we can't vote for your party. And it was regrettable that people like me were sort of suffering that national backlash, even though we'd worked hard locally and tried to do our best.
If the Conservatives didn't exist, which party would you be a member of?
Oh, it's impossible to answer. I mean, I've always been a member of the Conservative Party. I'm a Conservative through and through. I believe in opportunity.
Who'd you rather vote for? If you had to, if there was, you had to choose between two, would you vote Lib Dem or Reform?
It's just impossible to answer, Nicky. I wouldn't vote Lib Dem because the way that they fight campaigns. And
so you're more likely to vote for Reform?
Well, I mean, if Reform is going to be the party that can moderate the way it does business, if it becomes electable, if it needs to shift to the left, it's got to shift to the left because at the moment it's too far to the right. I'm a centre-right politician. That's why I joined the Conservative Party. I'm a Conservative through and through. And I probably would want to vote for another party, is the honest answer.
Thank you very much indeed. More to come. Sorry I'm late. It's 10:37.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here's the news from Richard Foster.
Thanks, Nicky. Hamas says its leader in Lebanon has been killed by Israeli airstrikes in the south of the country. Fateh Sharif Abu El Amin died in the attack, along with members of his family. Israel says it also carried out strikes on Hezbollah targets in eastern Lebanon. The Shadow Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, says Conservatives shouldn't fall into the trap that people will automatically return to the Tories when the Labour government becomes unpopular. He's told the party conference in Birmingham that they must focus on the country and not on themselves. The UK economy grew by 0.5% in the second quarter of the year. That's according to the latest figures from the Office for National Statistics. It's been revised down from the initial estimate of 0.6%. And Britain's about to become the first major world economy to stop using coal to generate power. The Ratcliffe-on-Soar power station in Nottinghamshire will shut down at midnight. It's been generating electricity for the last 56 years. That's the news. Shoujo Sarkar has the sport.
Thank you, Richard. Hampshire are to become the first county to be owned by an overseas franchise after agreeing a takeover deal by the Indian GMR Group, who co-own the IPL team, the Delhi Capitals. It will be a phased acquisition to be completed over the next 24 months, with some reports suggesting the deal is worth £120 million. Manchester United boss Erik ten Hag says he's not thinking about the club's owners opting for a change of manager and claims they're all on one page. United were beaten 3-0 by by Tottenham at Old Trafford, which leaves them 12th in the Premier League with 7 points from their opening six league games. Ireland are celebrating a shock win over the Women's World Rugby Champions New Zealand. The Irish won 29-27 after a last-minute converted try in the WXV1 tournament in Canada. And in the NFL, Kansas City quarterback Patrick Mahomes celebrated his 100th regular season start with a record 78th victory as the Chiefs beat the LA Chargers 17-10. Champions Kansas City have started the season with four straight wins.
The Football Daily Podcast on BBC Sounds.
I'm Joel Hart and I'm here at Liverpool's training ground interviewing the great Alison Becker.
I have three kids. They like to be on the goal when they play with me.
Do you see talent?
Yeah, I can see a little bit, but I would love to have a striker in the family.
Alison is up from the back and it goes. Oh, would you believe it?
In this club, I think we have this prophetic sentence, you never walk alone. It's always a reminder for me that people are on my side.
On the Football Daily Podcast, you can hear the full interview as we talk all things goalkeeping and what it takes to be the number one at one of the world's biggest clubs.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
So, yes, the ones at boot camp, Badenoch, Cleverly, Tugendhat, Jenrick. I saw a quote from a journalist over the weekend saying you go to the Labour Party conference and wonder how they ever won the election. Then you go to the Conservative Party conference and you remember. Ian Watson is a political correspondent. As we know, he's brilliant. He works for the BBC and he's at the conference. Hello, Ian.
Good morning, Nicky.
Is there a little bit more of a spring in their step, despite the big choices they have? Difficult decisions, hard choices, who's going to lead them? Is there a little bit more spring in the step because of the Labour woes recently?
Yeah, that's definitely the case, actually. I think it is kind of counterintuitive, I suppose, getting into this conference season. You expect Labour with a big majority to have something of a celebration. It was all very downbeat last week for obvious reasons, the donations row and winter fuel. And this week, Conservatives almost wiped out 50 more MPs than the Lib Dems. And here they are actually far less downbeat than you might imagine under those circumstances, partly because, as you say, Nicky, I mean, there is something at stake. They are going to choose a new leader. And also, I mean, we all like a bit of praise and a bit of attention, don't we, especially in our world, and so it is in politics. So the four leadership candidates are parading around the conference common areas and pressing the flesh. They're going up and making ordinary rank-and-file Conservative Party members feel important, that their vote actually matters. So it may be displacement activity, I don't know, but it certainly has led to a much better atmosphere. And there's even room for some jokes, actually, from Rishi Sunak last night. Again, as you say, I think happier because of Labour's unhappiness, but he said that socialists always like to spend other people's money, which is what Lord Ali is finding out the hard way. So a jibe at Keir Starmer, if not a side splitter, but he got a fantastic reception. He's on the way out. He's the guy that's lost the election. There's oohs and ahs about this being his last speech. There are boos when he mentioned Rachel Reeves and big cheers when he stuck the proverbial knife into the current government. So actually, yes, bizarrely enough, although the weather outside is absolutely utterly gloomy and miserable inside, they have a spring in their step.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? He's sticking the knife in, and Boris Johnson's sticking the knife in to him. Would this be a fair characterization going from right to left? The most right wing of them being the first I mentioned, and then over to the most left wing of them, if that's an appropriate expression. Jenrick, Badenoch, Cleverly, Tugendhat.
Yes, up to a point. But I think there's only a shade of difference.
Life is not as simple as that. Go on.
Exactly. It's never black and white. Many shades of grey or blue here. But no, I think that's broadly correct. But Tugendhat, of course, has the backing of not everyone, but a lot of people in the so-called One Nation group, and was addressing one of their many receptions taking place here last night. But he has actually, shall we say, recalibrated his message in some ways. So, for example, he knows, although there are four candidates here that people will listen to, that gets whittled down to two after this conference, and it's the members who decide, the members who you know, in the past had backed Liz Truss, for example.
You've got to recalibrate your message. Keir Starmer recalibrated his message to win the leadership. Neil Kinnock recalibrated his message to win the leadership. You have to. It's a recalibration game, isn't it, to win the membership.
It is, but it does mean that they're kind of crowding along the same grounds with degrees of difference. I think to fair, you know, Jenrick's right down the line, let's leave the European Convention on Human Rights. Kemi Badenoch, well, you know, actually, if things are much more difficult than that, Tom Tugendhat, maybe we could derogate, get some little bits of it, sneak out here and there with agreement. But to some extent, I think they're all saying, actually, my goodness, we have to address immigration. They're all saying that there has to be a big boost in defence spending. So there is actually a lot of consensus. And that's why I think you, in the end, although there may well be that kind of left-right spectrum, to some extent, they're trying to differentiate themselves in ways that appeal to the membership on perhaps, I'm not saying the trivial issues, but perhaps not the central issues of politics. So, for example, when Kemi Badenoch, apparently, she would say, misspoke on the question of maternity pay, in rushes Robert Jenrick straight away. We should be backing the working mums. The Conservative Party should make it more difficult to have children. So you can see that they will try and get as much difference as they can, but actually also they're trying to protect, if you like, their right flank when it comes to the membership, because they will have the ultimate say.
A Labour grandee who I bumped into not far from Broadcasting House, I happened to stop in the street and say, well, who should they choose? And he said, they would be mad not to choose Tugendhat. That's what the Labour grandee, who's a household name, said to me. Is there going to be a lot of horse trading as to who votes for who to make sure that somebody does and somebody doesn't get into the last two?
Yeah, well, they do say that the Parliamentary Conservative Party is the most sophisticated electorate in the country, which I think is a kind of euphemism for duplicitous. But I think it's certainly going to be the case. There'll be a lot of horse trading to see who gets into the final two. Already the Kemi Badenoch camp believe that others are ganging up on her because she seems to be the front runner. She's polling well in these, they're very difficult scientifically to verify, but these polls of party members, she seems to be doing particularly well. So her camp is worried that basically the try and take her out and prevent her getting into the final two in the first place, and they see this row over maternity pay as part of that message. I think it will certainly be the case that some people might hope that you know, their candidate's through and who they perceive to be a weaker candidate gets through. So I think although there'll be a lot of attention on what they're saying this week, we should emphasise that this is not going to be a decisive week. Really, all the horse trading is going to go on back at Westminster when the MPs vote to whittle this down from 4-2 once this conference has been and gone.
And of course, thanks, Ian. There's that paradox, that dilemma, that thing about the candidate most popular with the members is not necessarily the one who would be most popular with the electorate. It's kind of inversely proportional thing there. So, do you think the membership kind of get that?
I think they do. I mean, there has been a massive defeat, and I think certainly from the James Cleverly camp, that's what he is pushing time and time again. That never mind these, you know, Conservative home polls of the party members. He says to party members, "Look, I'm the guy who's the best known and the most popular with the wider electorate. So whatever you think of me, flaws or otherwise, if you want to win, you should be backing me. If you want to mess around, as he put it, you should back the other candidates." Although he was described to me by someone as everybody's second choice of party leader.
All right. Thank you very much indeed. Your second team. Thank you. Ian Watson, political correspondent at the conference. More to come throughout the day, throughout the week. Danny's in Wolverhampton. He's coming up. Paul in Newport, Pagnell, Leo in Westminster. Caroline's still with us as well. Caroline Slowcock. Hi, Danny. Hi, Paul. Hi, Leo. Leo, you're heading to conference today. Yeah. Well.
Yes, I am. Hi there, Nicky. How are you?
Have fun. Who's buttering your parsnips then?
You have a truly charming turn of phrase, Nicky. But it's every single parsnip is dripping with oozing with enthusiasm. No, it's oozing
greed
with enthusiasm.
Who
for
said that?
Kemi Badenoch.
Paul, you were straight in there. Sorry, I'll let you in a minute. Leo, sorry, I interrupted you because I heard that noise off stage, which was rather entertaining. Sorry, Kemi Badenoch, did you say Leo, yeah?
Yes, very much so, yeah. Every parsnip is dripping with enthusiasm.
Every party parsnip, well, not every, we'll see. Why Kemi Badenoch?
Well, I think Kemi, for a number of reasons, but it's above all her character and her very clear vision of conservative principles, which she has articulated time and again, and also demonstrated in her record in government. So, you know, it's a combination of things like citizenship, individual freedom, and what I really like about Kemi is she just got clarity of where she wants to.
Well, she wasn't very clear over the weekend about what she meant about maternity pay, was she? She had to clarify.
Well, I mean, if
you've got clarity, you don't have to clarify. And she did.
I think she was very clear, actually, Nikki.
No, she wasn't.
What happened, in fact, was the as often happens, the chatter and the press furore around what she said blew various aspects of it out of proportion.
Well, Marianne Cake said that she was a terrible turn of phrase. You're verging on being guilty of what Trotsky's called the Stalinistic falsification of history, because she did have to clarify. Come in here, Paul. You said something already. What are you talking about, Paul?
What am I talking about?
Yeah.
Well, it does make me laugh. I heard your former Tory MP a bit earlier on saying about how he'd always striven to serve the public. The Tory party strive to serve their donors. That's who they strive for. I'd recommend a book to anyone who's got 3.5 hours to fume. It's called A Decade of Tory. And
Nikki, could I make a quick point?
If you two talk to each other, I will listen with great interest. Make that point, Leo. Go on.
Saying that they're talking about the Conservative Party and its relationship with donors, that's pretty rich coming from the story. You know, at least we don't have donors paying for the glasses of our candidates.
You did have a donor contribute £15,000 for a holiday for Boris Johnson to go to Mustique, didn't you? Just after he'd spent 3 months lying to the public about Brexit.
And you had Mr. Hester.
He had so much to recover from.
Mr. Hester, who said every time who looked at Diana Abbott, he made him hate black women. Big donor. And he's a big donor as well.
Oh, well, they've got some lovely donors.
That's very different, though, in terms of it is, because the Labour Party was trying to appear like a knight in white shining armour.
The Tories just admit they're a party of sleaze?
No, the Conservatives simply acknowledge that there is a connection, that there is a relationship between donors and political parties, and we don't try to hide it. On the other hand, the Labour Party...
You hide your donors, though, don't you?
No, we don't. Otherwise, none of these... You know,
Did you know that horse racing was the last sport to close down at Brexit and the first to open? Do you know who got a lot of money from the horse racing fraternity? Nick Hancock.
Be careful of that. He's not Nick Hancock. He's a comedian. He went to Cambridge with a mate of mine. Very clever guy.
The people who bet on the Grand National benefit from horse racing. I mean, that's
We don't want to go into the weeds, in the grass, whatever, because
there's a lot of weeds in the Tory party.
Hang on a minute. We have to, there's a lot of weeds in the Tory party, but there's a lot of weave in the Labour Party at the moment, isn't there, with thousands and thousands of pounds of donations for designer suits when pensioners are having their money taken away from them. And if you are in the pulpit, and if you are preaching piety, it's the biggest misstep in politics to actually have pride before a fall and to seem like a hypocrite. And that's the problem.
The winter fuel payment should never have been a universal credit. He's quite right.
Nikki, going back to the Conservative leadership contest and what you and Kemi's comments about maternity, what I
I want to take it away from Femi, from Kemi's comments about brutality within the first hour, but I want you very clearly, you've come out for Kemi. That's fine. We're going to hear from Peter in Somerset in just a moment's time. And it's 10:53 on a Monday morning. And Naga is here from 11. Great.
Hello. Hi. 11 Hello. Till 2 today. Yes. Do you want to know what's coming up?
Yes.
We're going to start with the situation in the Middle East. The conflict does seem to be spreading rapidly. So we'll be keeping everyone up to date with the latest developments. We'll talk to a British mother who's currently in Beirut with her young family, desperate to return home. So we'll find out exactly what it's like for her there now. Here in the UK, we'll mark the end of the traditional way of steelmaking in Wales. The last remaining blast furnace in Port Talbot stops producing steel. And of course, the closure is part of a restructuring that will see 2,800 jobs cut. So future steelmaking in South Wales will rely on imports until an electric furnace is built. And if you live or work in the area, it holds a special place for you or your family. Let me know. You can get in touch, 85058. Also, tonight on BBC One, our colleague Kirsty Walk is presenting Panorama, the Menopause Industry Uncovered, which looks at private clinics and the way they prescribe HRT, hormone replacement therapy. So we'll take a look at that because it's thrown up a lot of questions and maybe some concerns as well for people who use HRT. I'll be joined by a consultant endocrinologist, Dr. Anise Mukherjee, who specialises in hormone-related conditions, features in the programme. No direct medical advice is what's on offer, but she will be able to answer some of your questions if you are concerned about the levels or prescriptions of HRT that you have or haven't been prescribed. Maybe you're after HRT, you think you need HRT and you're being told no. She can explain some of the reasons we take certain hormones. So lots coming up, Nikki, and must watch, of course, from one.
I was in a taxi the other day, Naga, and the fella says, he said, I like your show, but he says, I like Naga's better.
Yay, we liked him. I hope you gave him a big tip.
Yeah, I gave him a tip. Listen to mine. And then he said, she's coming to our charity golf day.
Was this yesterday?
Yeah, it was
the
coming
golf day
up.
Yesterday.
Yeah, it was coming up.
Yeah. Oh, actually, someone came up to me yesterday. I was there and said, say hello to Nikki Campbell.
Ah!
Shorter guy with really short hair. Yeah.
Yeah, Peter is his name.
There you go.
Yeah.
I didn't catch his name, but he said, say hello to Nikki Campbell says hello. That's what he said.
There we are. There's all synergy.
You and I can't even get together for a cup of tea. We have to say hello via strangers.
It's 10:56. A stranger of immaculate and impeccable taste as well. Where were we? Peter, good morning. Let's talk about the Tories and David in the Cotswolds. Points from both of you. Let's go with David first. What do you think, David? Lifelong Tory voter, you are billed as. What do you think about what's happening at the moment?
Also, ex-toolmaker, Nikki, and wife who was also nurse. How about that?
Your toolmaker and nurse, there we are. Yeah.
We talked about that before.
Get a better line. Get a dodgy line. Stand somewhere else. Go outside. I need to hear what you're going to say, because it's an iffy line. A faffy, iffy line. Peter in Somerset, what do you think? Can they win again? How can they win again, Peter?
I think they can win again, Nikki, but I think they can do it by doing two things. The first would be, I think they need to expunge themselves of pretty much every politician in that party who still worships at the altar of Liz Truss and everything that she stands for, and I mean that both economically and ideologically. Any of those politicians who are still interested in just making populist points as opposed to taking things seriously are not interested in. So that includes you, Kemi. And the other thing that I think they need to do is start acting like the adult in the room. I think they need to start taking the British society seriously again, stop treating politics like a game, which I think some previous high-ranking Tories have done. And like I said, stop just parroting the sort of headline stuff from across the North Atlantic. And start taking it seriously. And if you want me to, Nikki, I can name you one ex-Tory MP who, and I'm not a Tory voter, by the way. I've voted in the past, but I haven't done pretty much since Boris Johnson came into the picture. But I could name you one ex-Tory MP who I think speaks honestly, who I think is an adult in the room, and I think has shown that he has got the power of his convictions, because he's already shown time and time again that he's.
All right, let me build it up and stand down. Listen, I used to be a game show host. I know how to do this. Okay, and the name of that ex-Conservative MP?
Rory Stewart.
He ain't going back.
If he did, they'd get my vote, because he would take... I think he speaks honestly, I think he takes things seriously, and I think he would drag the Tory party away from the lurching towards the right wing, which has been doing very, very slowly through Braverman and Anderson and Truss, and it would pull it back to the centre and make it votable again. It would be the exact same process, Nicky, that Starmer has done with Labour. Labour drifted to the left under Corbyn, became unvotable, and Starmer had to go in, be unpopular, and pull it back towards the centre.
Mirror image, yeah, very interesting. Peter, thanks for your considered thoughts. David, haven't got a lot of time. We lost the line, but what would you like to say in 40 seconds? David?
The leadership contest is going to be very difficult. Now, because somebody wants to have the stripes, it's a very different matter of actually wearing them. Mm-hmm. So you have people in the past like Margaret Thatcher. People wrote her off as a silly housewife, I think. You've got Zelensky, an ex-comedian, turned out to be a fantastic leader. Margaret Thatcher turned out to be a fantastic leader. So I just hope that whoever is elected does take that job on board and does a great job, because, quite frankly, there's a huge amount to go at with the Labour Party. And I knew they would implode, but within 3 months, I mean, even they have surpassed their incredibility.
Great stuff. Thank you all. Really interesting. We'll return to this one. And the home of the
Premier League. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 11 o'clock. This is Harvey Cook. Experts are appealing for people to come forward if they think their relatives may have been buried at a mother and baby home in Ireland. The nuns, who ran the home at Tuam in County Galway between the 1920s and 60s, disposed of up to 796 babies and young children in a disused sewage tank. A new excavation of the site is aiming to identify the victims. Daniel McSweeney, who's in charge of the project, says there's no guarantee of success.
We don't know, for example, how much DNA will be recoverable from remains that have been in the ground for 60, 70, 80 years. Remains that are identified will be returned to family so that they can bury them themselves. Remains that are not identified, I mean, there will be a burial of those remains, but I think memorialisation goes beyond that. And I think that's where we need to talk to families and discover, well, how actually do you want these people to be memorialised and in what way?
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees has said 100,000 people have left Lebanon for Syria due to the recent Israeli airstrikes. Overnight, Israel widened its operations, and there are fears tanks may soon cross the border into Lebanon. Our Middle East correspondent Hugo Bechega, who's in Beirut, has been following developments.
An Iranian-backed militant group, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, said three of its leaders were killed as a result of this strike that hit a residential building in the Kola area. And this morning, Hamas said its leader in Lebanon was killed in an Israeli airstrike in southern Lebanon. So it seems these are indications that the Israeli military is expanding its campaign in Lebanon beyond Hezbollah.
Preparations are underway to close the last coal-fired power station in the UK today. Ratcliffe-on-Soar in Nottinghamshire first started production in 1968. When the plant closes tonight, the UK will become the first major economy to stop using coal. The Shadow Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has warned his fellow Conservatives not to fall into what he called the trap of believing people will get fed up with Labour and automatically return to the Tories. Speaking at the party's conference in Birmingham, he also said the Conservatives have got themselves in a position at July's general election where they were seen as part of the problem rather than the solution when it came to dealing with the issues facing the UK. Barbra Streisand and Dolly Parton are among the celebrities to have shared their memories of Kris Kristofferson.